Hey y'all, this is Christine. I'm just doing a cold open. Today we have two very special guests. I just want to let you know that the podcast is arranged a little different today. We're going to do our main discussion right at the start, and all our other regular segments will be coming after that in the second half of the podcast.
All right, let's do it. To Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy, book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Christine.
And I'm Natasha, and this is episode 17. And today, we're talking with number one international best-selling author duo. They've had 18 New York Times best-selling novels, The Unhoneymooners, The Soulmate Equation, Roomies, Love and Other Words, Josh and Hazel's Guide to Not Dating, Something Wilder, Twice in a Blue Moon, and more. Christina Hobbs and Lauren Billings, aka Christina Lauren.
Yes. So Christina Lauren are two people, if y'all didn't know. I know a lot of people, when I mentioned Christina Lauren last week, they're like, what? Two people? I've always imagined one. But yes, Christina Lauren, they're a staple in romance books today. Literally, whenever I read a book and in the book they're reading a romance novel, it's a Christina Lauren novel, which is the coolest. And so today we're going to be talking with them about our top rom-com movies that inspired us, and we're going to be talking about our gateway romance novels. Christina Lauren, welcome to the pod.
Hello. Hi.
Thank you so much for having us. We love you two so much. It's awesome that we're finally all on one screen together.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited. You're our first author guests.
Yay. So before we hop into our rom-com faves, like inspiration, we want to learn a little bit about you guys. So your besties who write amazing books together, can you tell us how you met for the very first time and what your first impressions were of each other?
So, hello, I'm Christina.
I'm Lauren.
So Lo and I met writing fan fiction online, which is funny because the first time that I met Natasha in person was at Y'all West.
Yep.
And she was like, oh my God, I've been reading your story since I was like 15 or something. And I was like, oh,
that's like one of my most favorite stories to tell. And also, like, whenever like we're in a room together, I'm like, I read Christina's fan fiction at the ripe age of 15. She scandalized me. It's my favorite thing to do.
I love this so much.
But I remember, like, sorry that I'm turning this into our story, but I remember when I first saw you, I was just like, because you guys literally changed my life, because I just was so in love with everything you wrote, and I was so excited to watch your journey, and now we're friends, and it's my favorite thing ever. Okay,
anyways. Look at us all now.
I know.
did y'all write under, on, because I was never in the fan fiction world, so do you write under like screen names like you do, like we did for everything on the internet back in the day?
Bo and I were both writing fan fiction. This was 2009, so this was like prime Twilight time, and that's the fandom we were writing in at the time, though Lo has written in other fandoms over the years. And so we were reading each other's stories online under pen names. She was Lola Shoes. I was TBY789. And which is the worst name that I didn't ever think it was going to mean anything.
Do you know what I just realized? Is now when we name characters, Christine is like, I think her name should be Lipstick and he can be Lotion. Like, she names things based on things on her desk. So like, if she says a character's name is Jade, I'm like, were you looking at something green? It's so funny that her like pen name was TBY789 because it was after her dog Toby, and she's like Toby 79.
Yeah, no, I think it was was like my AOL name or something, and it came up with the 789. And so people used to be like TBY numbers is like what they used to call me. So I honestly would have put more thought into it if I knew I would still be talking about it this many years later.
If you knew that you would get 10 million hits on your fan fiction.
Yes. So
You got 10 million hits?
Yeah, and this was in the time before Wattpad when it wasn't like a page swipe was a hit. Like a hit was like a whole chapter.
Oh my gosh.
That's incredible. Yeah.
But I was just like an idiot, just like writing stories. Like I had no idea what I was doing. And Lo was writing this like amazing canon fic. So for people who don't know, canon is like they were vampires in it. And she said, I'm putting on a panel at San Diego Comic-Con. Would you like to come be on it? And I just like lost my mind. And so that was the first place that we ever met. Which is funny because we get to see Christine and Natasha at Comic-Con once in a while. That's like usually our like yearly like flyby. We get to have dinner or something. Mm-hmm. And so we met in person. And my first impression of Lo was that she was like so cool and so smart. And it's funny because at the time, she had just found out she was pregnant and like hadn't really told anybody. And she told me. And so like her daughter now turns 13. And like, that's like how we like measure our relationship is that she had just found out she was pregnant. Oh, but I just thought she was like the coolest person I'd ever met in my entire life. So we met, we got along really well. We decided to like write a fan fiction one shot together, which is just like a little short story. And then that was fun. And so for some reason we were just like, hey, do you want to write like a book together? Like that felt really natural. Cause if you've ever been in fan fiction, you know, it's just super collaborative. And so we like wrote a book together and started querying and da da da. And here we are. Look at us now.
Look at you guys go. Amazing. I do. Christina was in a podcast, and that's also so that
Twigasm.
Twigasm. No, don't say it.
You know, this is what this podcast is. This is those forking fangirls. Like we get to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
We have our fangirls. Like that is in our DNA. Everything we do in some way comes back to that.
Well, I remember. Because I was so intertwined in that like fan fiction world, because that's like what I hopped into after like reading Twilight. And this probably just goes into like our discussion. But I have like these distinct memories of listening to your guys's podcast. I didn't really, because you were the first. I mean, I could. Yeah, you guys were the first ones to really. What is the word? I'm blanking on the word, but I wanted to start a podcast because of you guys. You inspired me. That's the word. And I remember I started like a Twilight podcast, like when you guys stopped and we were called like the Twi Nerds United. And I have these memories of me listening to your podcast. Like I remember I was like, I felt like I was like a 40-year-old woman, like sitting in my bath, having like a Diet Coke, listening to the podcast.
In the bath?
Yeah.
I mean, these were early days of podcasting too. You're talking 2009, 2010, you know, like that podcasting is this huge industry now. And at the time it was sort of like, I mean, I think you guys at one point had an episode make it into the top 10 on iTunes.
It's a lot of work though. So like anybody who does it, I like so much respect. It's so much work. You wouldn't think so, but
I was listening to so many pilot podcasts back then too, but I always listened while I was like filing papers at work.
I was in high school, so
I mean, listening in class, in college. wait, before we move into the discussion, though, we need your side of the story, Lo. What was your first impressions?
I mean, it felt sort of faded in a way because. We just are such different personalities, but like in a very complimentary way, you know. I'm very methodical and organized and like, just sort of like intense. And Christina, from the moment I met her, was super bubbly and fun. And actually she fell and broke her foot on that first trip.
Sorry,
just like Bella.
Just walking.
Yes. She was the Bella and I was just the like Edward.
Bella, yeah.
Yes. And, it was really a bummer for her, but even still, she was able to sort of like look back on the whole trip and remember how much fun it was to meet all these people from fandom. And so that when we decided to write this little one shot, you know, it was like, she sort of, I don't know, I always forget that she broke her foot, and it was this horrible injury.
I forget that I broke my foot.
Because the whole trip was so much fun, you know? So I don't know. It was like kind of a whirlwind. I think everything felt really busy and crazy, and we were like, let's write this thing. And then we're like, that was really fun. Let's write a book. Like, it's that easy. I think it was great in a way that we were so naive, because I think had we known what struggles would be ahead of us, we probably wouldn't have pursued it in the same way. But I'm glad that we didn't know, and I'm glad that we were just like, let's just do this thing. And it, you know, because we're here now. Yep. So it was a lot of work, don't get me wrong, but I'm glad we didn't know how much work it would be.
Yeah. And that like neither one of us were like psychos.
Because it worked out.
It would have been a problem.
When you say struggles, do you mean struggles like with the writing or with like
publishing?
Or with publishing?
I mean, the publishing process is really intense. And there's just a lot of different gates that you have to kind of find the lock to. And it's not always obvious. You know, I think in some ways, publishing makes itself as an industry sort of community wise, very like opaque to people coming in. And so there's a lot of information online, but not all of it is accurate, or not all of it is super helpful. So I think I'm glad that we didn't know how hard each stage would be, because we just like kept wanting to get to the next one. We just wanted to finish a book, and then we just wanted to get an agent, and then we just wanted to sell, you know? So like each step felt like, well, that step will be easy. This one is the hard one. And so, you know, it's just a hard process. So somebody in the comments has asked if we recommend writing fic as a way to get into writing, and 100%, like Christina and I always say that writing fan fiction is like writer boot camp, because you're doing it in an online space where people give you their honest opinion and they don't usually mince words. Mm-hmm. So that has two benefits, more than that, but here are two. One is that it teaches you craft, so you learn how to write in a way that entertains an audience. And two, it helps you develop a thick skin. Like, you learn how to take feedback, whether it's couched kindly or not, and you get better. So that by the time, if you ever finish a book and you launch that book and you are in an online space, you kind of know how to comport yourself a little bit. Like, you're not out there showing your ass to the internet every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has really helped us to learn how to behave in writing spaces, aside from all of the benefits of the craft side.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's also just like a really great community as well.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
It's where we've met so many writer friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Alice Clayton, Sally Thorne, Nina Bochy, you know, there's all, we have so many friends that we met in fandom. So
it's funny because now we see people who are just starting out and like looking for critique groups and looking for all of these things. But like, we had that sort of built in, you know, that's what fandom, if you're writing fic, you essentially have a built-in critique group, and you get this little group of people that are just like, I don't know how we could have done it without him.
So when we made friends, like in the YouTube bubble community, like it would be like you follow each other on Twitter, and then like once you meet in person, it's like, oh, we're friends. For the fan fiction community, was it like that? Was it like you start following each other on socials, or were you not friends until you met it? Like IRL, did you not feel like it was like established? So what was the process there? Because I know, like, I feel like every little community has its own little ways where you like start thinking of yourselves as friends.
I mean, I think I thought Twitter was just Twilight people for a long time.
It was. Same.
You know, I don't think I realized that there were other spaces on Twitter, because as soon as I got into fic, and I got there from a place of like wanting to see the Twilight series end a different way, right? Like, I had been writing fan fiction since I was 12 in different fandoms, but Twilight specifically, I was like, I want to rewrite the fourth book and make it sexier and like fluffier, you know,
just like Natasha wanted.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us came to it for that exact reason. Yep. And so I think as soon as I started writing fic, I would find these pen names on Twitter, and I realized that's where all the conversations were happening about like fic recs and, you know, graphics and all that stuff. Like, people were really creative in that space, so I don't think I realized that Twitter had other things to offer.
No.
Because yeah, we immediately followed each other.
It was like a giant cafeteria. And like, as soon as an update would happen, like if the submissive updated, everybody, it was just like silent while everybody ran to go read. It was like an event. And I really miss that about Twitter a lot.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
We're like, back in my day.
I know.
I was like, what's the submissive?
The submissive, the dominant?
For people who don't know, is that like a person who wrote fan fiction?
Okay, so this is a fanfic by Tara Sumi. And there's so there's different factions within fandom. There's canon, which is like taking Stephanie Meyer's rules and her characters and writing them as is. There's alternate universe where they're still vampires, but you're putting them in like completely different stories. And then there's AU All Human, where they're like just the archetypes of the Twilight characters. So it's like Edward is like ride or die for Bella. He's in love with Bella. Bella is like clumsy and the new girl and, you know, has some special connection to Edward. Like there's, you take some elements of it from the canon world, but you make them human and you play with that.
Right.
And The Submissive was a fic where Edward, she kind of played on his like dominating personality with Bella. And she made him a dominant. He's a dom and he was looking for a new submissive. And so she like applies for the position and
It was
before Fifty Shades or Master of the Universe. And it really inspired that in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. It was so good. And then she wrote it from Edward's point of view, and that was called The Dominant.
Yeah. Wasn't there a third?
The Training.
The Training, yeah. Like, that's what I read first. Names. I remember when Masters of the Universe training. Was, like, coming out, and I was like, wait, I thought I already... I was always like, oh, well, I read The Submissive, you know? Like, that was the first.
Okay, I think we should move into our main discussion because I want to have time afterward to chat. So let's open it up then with maybe our romance gateway book before we go to our favorite rom-coms here, because it kind of goes a little, I'll start because mine was Twilight. And since we're talking of Twilight, like I didn't even think that there were people out there that weren't satisfied with the Twilight sex scenes at all. Sexier versions. So when Natasha told me that, I was like, wait, what? I was obsessed with the Fade to Black scene.
No.
I read it so many times. You took
So just Fade to Black. That's it. And then
There's the lead up to it. They're not just Fade to Black. It's not like they kiss Fade to Black. It's a lead up. But yeah, I read it lots of times. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Did your like copy of Eclipse like open automatically to like the leg hitch?
The leg
scene?
Hitch.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
See, but that to me was like sexier than Breaking Dawn.
Well, I remember I really liked the scene like when they were both vampires in Breaking Dawn. I thought that was so sexy and they were finally on the same level in terms of their senses and such. And he didn't have to worry about breaking her. I was like,
see, that was low fit.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh my God. It was so fun.
Yeah. So no one showed me romance books before then. That was like my first introduction to romance in general. There were no books that were ever given to me as a teenage girl in school that had romance as the, you know, main kind of plot line there. It was like Harry Potter, I was shipping, you know, Hermione and Ron, and in Dan Brown's books, I was shipping him with whatever random woman they put in there and they never carried through to the next book. I was like, what happened with her? So yeah, Twilight obviously opened up the Twilight fandom for me, and everyone was talking about all the other books they were reading. So that's where I latched on. Like I found The Mortal Instruments, and of course Stephanie Meyer recommended Hunger Games, and that's where I started to find through like the YA romance community there.
Yeah, that's such a good path to finding your way to adult contemporary romance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some really great YA romance, especially in the era of like 2009. I mean, for sure now still too. There's so much more now, but there were some really key ones back in like 2009, 10 and 11, like mm-hmm. Anna and the French Kiss.
Yes.
And, you know, all of those, it was just, I mean, it felt like sort of the renaissance of YA romance.
Truly. Yes, I was obsessed with Anna and the French Kiss. Mm-hmm. It was my favorite. All right, so what about y'all?
I totally forgot about this as I was writing this down. My mother gave me Forever by Judy Blume.
Oh, my God.
So that was my first, like, gateway romance novel, and it
she's like, here, learn with this.
Yes. Yeah, she's like, here, this is why you shouldn't give yourself to someone. And I'm like, that's great, right. Thanks, give Mom.
And I bet all you took away from it is that men name their penises.
I totally forgot about that. No, all I took away was I read this on like a family vacation and my younger cousins were like, what are you reading? And I was like, oh, you can have this after I'm done. They're like 3 years. I was like 14, I think. And I was just like, I like this feeling. Like, that's, that's what I took away from that.
Oh, yes. Romance reader is born.
Yes. Yeah, so that, I remember I was like sitting there in my living room reading it and I had finished it. And my mom's like, what'd you think? She's like, did you like it? I was like, yeah.
And then I think
she gave me a Danielle Steele book afterwards.
Yes, that was my gateway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lo, why don't you go?
Yeah, talk about Danielle Steele.
So, like Christine, I didn't have anybody handing me romance books. In fact, my parents were very, like, literary in their book choices. Well, my mom was, at least. She's, like, a literary fiction reader. My dad was, like, sci-fi, high fantasy. And so I was always drawn to the romance storyline in any book I read. I always wanted more focus on the relationship. And so I kind of sought it out myself, and I would have my allowance on the weekends and I would go and buy books at the used bookstore. And so the first romance book I ever bought for myself was Palomino by Danielle Steele, which is like the story, the woman's name I think is Samantha Jordan or something. And her husband leaves her, and she like leaves her job in marketing or advertising or something, and she goes and lives on this California ranch. And she meets the foreman there. She makes all these friends, and the foreman is this guy, Tate Jordan.
Such a good
name. She's Taylor, Samantha Taylor, and he's Tate Jordan, which are just like the most romantic names. Anyway, I wanted to name a kid Taylor forever. Like the whole time I was a teenager, I was like, someday I will have a Taylor. I don't care if it's a girl or a boy. Anyway, and so she meets him and they fall in love and they have this really like stormy affair. Although, you know, with Danielle Steele, it's never like super saucy. And he leaves and she has an accident on a horse and she ends up in a wheelchair. And so it's sort of like, when he comes back, will he still love her? And it was like seriously the most romantic thing I'd ever read. And so I basically made my way through like so many Danielle Steele books. Mm. And it felt like I was like defying my parents in a way. Like I felt like I was like, I wasn't hiding it from them, but I felt like it was something that I should have asked permission for. And I just decided not to. And I just think I knew from those books on, I was just like always going to be a romance reader first and foremost.
Oh, were they like more, so that sounds dramatic. Were they more or like fairly dramatic? All of them? Like,
yeah,
just kind of
pretty
sad.
Dramatic. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty like, it's like a, you know, a woman who has like a huge fortune and then she loses everything and she has to start from, you know, like start all over again. And the man that she meets, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they're very big drama, high stakes, sort of like sweeping characters that just feel like both so fun and like ridiculous, but also unrealistic, but it doesn't matter. You know, like you're not here for, you know, the dad bod and the like, you know, the 9-to-5 job. You want to like have this giant escape. Fortune in a villa in Tuscany that you lose because your, you know, cheating husband betted on a whatever in Monaco. Like that's what you want to read.
Yes, exactly. Christina, what about you?
So my mom was a huge romance reader. She had, like, in our garage, we just had bookcases just completely filled. She would go to the used bookstore and she read like Harlequin, Silhouette Desire, like all of those. And her favorite were like cowboy romances, things that, you know, took place on a ranch. So I probably read without her knowing, like, just hundreds of those. And I just like, there was just nothing I loved more than that. Like, she's lost everything and she's starting over and she goes and gets a job like as a cook on a ranch and she doesn't really know how to cook. And then always there's a huge storm and so like there's a cow that's calving in the middle of the night and she has to go help, you know? And I just like really loved that stuff. But when I was like 12, I read Elvis and Me. And there was just like something so swoony about like she was 14 and he was Elvis and like
that's and when so I, in love.
Yeah, and that's when I knew like it never even and never ever clocked in any way that that was like any at all inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And that's like when I knew like that's what I wanted to read was like stuff like that. But Twilight is the one that I read like as an adult that made me like reminded me that I loved romance and I loved reading those things. And it was obviously the thing that like got me writing. And I loved it. I read like everything, but it's when I read Anna and the French Kiss in probably 2010. And it's like rom-com-y that I was like, oh, this is like, I want to write books like this. I want to write books that make me feel this way. And so it's so funny that that's the book. Like, I'm like, why is this not a movie yet? Why? Like everything is there. But and yeah, so that book and like Lo and I, we just like loved Stephanie Perkins so much. We got to meet her and she just like, you know, when you meet the people you look up to and they're just as like lovely as you hoped. And we were like, that's what we want to do. That's the kind of book we want to write. That's kind of author we want to be. And yeah, that book like that's... changed everything.
I'll never forget the day that, the day that John Green made a video about Anna and the French Kiss. Because I've been following the Vlogbrothers forever. And I had never heard him talk about a book that I guess was not very literary. Because John loves to talk about The Great Gatsby and Catcher in the Rye and all that. And so I immediately bought this book because I was like, Anna and the French Kiss?
That's a great title.
It's a great title.
Great title, hooks you immediately. And she was a nerd fighter, and I was just so excited to read it, and I loved it.
I feel like that gateway for me was like Sophie Kinsella, because I had seen Confessions of a Shopaholic, and I was like, oh, this is a book. Like, I want to read more of this. And that was like the rom-commy, older, like adult romance that I think I picked up like after Twilight at some point, because I didn't really know what that rom-com situation was.
I feel like I missed her era. Not that she's not still out there, because she is and she's amazing, but like the sort of the Confessions of a Shopaholic heyday, because it was sort of like during and after graduate school for me. And then when I was having kids, so I sort of felt like everything else fell away for a little while. And there was this whole chunk in like that time frame where
like
I just...
Like Chick Litty.
Yeah, that I just like kind of miss. It was like post Bridget Jones, but pre Twilight.
Yeah, it was
you know?
Pre Twilight, so yeah. I wasn't aware. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Bridget Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very rom commy. Natasha, do you want to take us into one of your favorite rom coms?
Yeah. I just totally forgot about Bridget Jones. That just whoosh.
Yeah.
I was like thinking of all. Okay, well,
but actually, can I stop for a second? Because I think that that's a really cool thing about our lives and the genre is the things that pull us back into the genre after a breakaway, whether it's for college or whether it's for having a child or whatever it is, whatever reason you kind of dip out for a minute, there are those touchstone books that have pulled all of us back in. And so like Twilight is one, Bridget Jones is one that's earlier. Like obviously there's just different books that, you know, every romance reader is like, oh my God, yes. Like it's this sort of pillar, right?
What's crazy is the pandemic like was an event that did that for so many people. Like we have so many readers now that are like, I didn't read romance or didn't really read before the pandemic, and then book talk and awesome. You know all of that
brought
stuff just changed that.
Yep,
that's awesome.
Well, I just changed one of mine to Bridget Jones because I forgot. Because now as I'm thinking about it, because Bridget Jones is a retelling of Pride and Prejudice, and I was trying to figure out, because that's Pride and Prejudice is such a huge like romance story in my life because I read the book when I was in high school, and I loved the film and all of Jane Austen. But I think it was honestly Bridget Jones that started that, because my mom had showed me Emma, and I didn't really connect with that. But then she had showed me Bridget Jones, and I thought that was hilarious, and I loved it. And of course, there's the controversial thing about Bridget Jones is the whole body image aspect of it. And watching that now, it's a tough pill to swallow. Yeah. But the whole like Mr. Darcy thing and like Hugh Grant.
My God, he plays such a great cad.
So good. I die over that scene when they're in the boat and he's drunk and he falls into the water. Yes. And he has the cigarette in his mouth. And I'm just like, this is such and a great like scene.
I know. He's just pitch perfect in that movie. I mean, they all are. They're great.
And all of the sequels, I love both number 2 and number 3. I think
which is the
great
one that she ends up in jail?
Number
in,
like, 2.
Vietnam. The second one. The second
I mean,
one.
I could leave that one.
Yeah. The third one is so good. The third Bridget Jones great. And Baby. Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah.
go ahead. Oh, no. They're just hysterical and I love them. I just wish that we were more aware back then about body image and how that would impact us as young girls, especially me watching that. I was like 10, 11 watching Bridget Jones, and my mom was like fully in that headspace. So she wouldn't teach me anything different than you gotta lose weight. So, yeah.
It was just all over in the 90s, everywhere, mm-hmm. I feel like.
Yeah.
All right. Lo, you want to give us one of yours?
Sure. Okay, so I'm going to go back. I'm going to do this a little out of order from where I put them. But, like, You've Got Mail, Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, like, the Meg Ryan era for me was very foundational from a film, like, idea standpoint. And even now, when I think about plotting books with Christina and how we want to lay out the arcs, like, I always kind of go back to those and thinking about, like, the feelings that I have at the beginning, how those relationships are established, how, like, the conflict happens. So I will say, like, the one that I love the most, which is weird because I don't know if it's her most popular, but I love You've Got Mail, even though it's a little, like,
one by far
dual catfishing. I think I love that he is genuinely, like, toxic in her world, right? Like, he's this big bookstore owner. He's basically the, like, Amazon or the Barnes and Noble, and she's got the little indie bookstore, and he puts her
shop
out of business.
The corner.
Yeah. And, like, you know, but that they find this sort of beautiful relationship despite that. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, I think, from, like, a feminist standpoint and a small business standpoint and all of that. But I just really, really loved their story, and I love their dynamic. So,
yeah, I completely agree. And for Sleepless in Seattle, I don't get that one. I guess I watched it much later. I watched it when I was in my 20s, but I was like, they don't even see each other till the end.
I mean, that one was, like, huge, but I liked it. But I didn't feel the same. Like, I wanted them in the same room like you. I think that's, like, the real romance longing is to have them actually together and feel that tension between them. So
I don't know. I do love that one. But I think my favorite of Meg Ryan's is When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, that one was so funny.
I just watched that for the first time a couple of years ago.
The first time?
Yeah, I know.
It was in, like, 2018 or 19.
It was before the pandemic. That's all I know. We watched it in New York with Kristen, who's our, like, PR rep. And I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. But I don't really understand why he's a hero.
It's so weird because I watched that in college and didn't get it, and then I watched it a couple years ago and I was like, this is hilarious. Why did I think it was not funny? And I think it's because I was still, like, until a certain age, I feel like you're not willing to accept it not, I don't know, not them being friends for so long.
Yeah.
Not getting together. I think that was so frustrating for me, but it was so funny little bit later. Yeah,
it definitely does feel like a much more grown up relationship. Like, you know, like the friends thing. I think the question of whether a man and a woman can really be friends was something that we played a lot with Josh and Hazel's Guide to Not Dating. And, like, this idea that, you know, they just, like, assumed they were just besties. It was almost like the other side of it where they assumed there was nothing between them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course there was, but it's always fun to go back to those sort of like really world changing rom-coms and sort of see like what you can play with and what you can pull into present day.
Mm-hmm. Christina, what was one of yours?
The Proposal, because like, yes. I so like good. I live for like enemies to lovers, and that one is
like one of our favorites.
Yeah, it's like enemies to lovers, Grumpy Sunshine, Marriage of Convenience. It's like everything, and Ryan Reynolds is like every his character in that is sort of like everything I love about a romance hero when they're like when they're, you know, funny and sarcastic and dry and
I want to suggest that every movie he's been in since, he's playing Ryan Reynolds. And I think that that was the first movie where he did that. And it was so perfect that he was like, all right, now I know how I need to be.
Just be yourself.
Yeah. Because when we got your email saying to pick our three favorites, I was like, all right, Christine, I know which one you're going to say too. I'm gonna let you have this one.
You know what, Lo and I have read the script for that because, you know, in like writing scripts, it's good to like read them. And the script is so boring. It's so boring. It is truly what and Sandra Bullock do that makes it so amazing.
It's about delivery and chemistry. Mm-hmm. And that was so informative for us. We were like, holy smokes. It would have been such a different movie with two different actors.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Thinking about that when I was watching How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, I was rewatching that last night and I was trying to figure out, you know, why I loved it so much. Yeah. And it's really, they don't have much dialogue that's funny, except when they're like, you know, playing tricks with each other. But in terms of like falling in love in the first night and then like afterward when they're falling in love, it's all their chemistry. Like they kind of, even at the end, she has this line that's really, really, really cheesy. Like, you call my bluff. And it just works because of the actors.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is all about who's playing the lead roles in these movies much of the time.
It's so true. So one of my other choices is Long Shot, that has Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen.
I haven't seen that.
Not a couple you would imagine in a rom com, and it works.
So they are the most unlikely couple, and on paper you would look at that and be like, that does not make sense. There's no universe in which Seth Rogen could land a Charlize Theron character, right?
Like, oh, of course the derpy guy gets Charlize Theron.
Yeah. Or like it would make you mad that like no like comparably, you know, frumpy woman would end up as the romantic heroine, right?
Is this the president one?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay,
yes.
I've seen this.
And here's the thing, they lean into him being like everything that Seth Rogen is, and they still show and make you understand why she would fall for him specifically. And their relationship is actually so genuine, and also this movie is laugh out loud funny. There's a scene where he falls down the stairs, and I swear to God, I have watched just that scene like probably 500 times. Like every time I'm like bummed out or sad, I like put that scene on and it makes me laugh. It's just like, but again, like you're saying, it worked because of them. It's like perfect for them.
Yeah, I know. And it's when you read a book, you're looking for like all that like fun dialogue that connects them. And it's so different with a film. It's all about the chemistry.
And you want to see them fall in love in both cases. But the way it happens in book and film is really different. We can't lean on like montages and like glances across rooms. And, you know, those things that you can do in a film that you can't do in a book. But it can still like inspire you, you know?
Yes. Yes, for sure. All right. I'm going to drop one of mine. Miss Congeniality is I feel like the rom. I don't know if you'd even call it a rom. It's an action rom com.
I love that one. Yes. In Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I was obsessed with this movie. I watched it a gajillion times. It's like the one I go back to when I, you know, when you like need inspiration to just like write something. I always watch a movie and it's always like one of my core, and Miss Congeniality is one of those. It's so funny. And I love Sandra Bullock. I love The Proposal. Like, I think she's just perfect in everything.
I love her.
Everything comedic. She has such great timing.
It has like actual plots.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like they're trying to find a bad guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And I love all of the, you know, female friendships that she forms that are like unlikely. And I love just, I've always like from, I think when I saw it, I don't know when it came out. It was like the early 2000s, maybe 2001, 2002. So I was like 11, 13. And I just always wanted to be just like her. I wanted to sing. I wanted to do her like solar plex in step. No good.
She has so a really bad. Good emotional arc too, because she starts out like hating everything about it and stuff, and by the end she's really changed.
I love the good coming into your own arcs thing.
She does that really well, actually. She does that really well in Heat too, which is like the buddy rom-com comedy with Melissa McCarthy.
And that's one.
That is one of my favorite Sandra Bullock movies. Again, it is so funny. Like, it is like sitting alone watching it laugh out loud funny. And she has, it's the same thing where she kind of starts as a stiff, like, you know.
She's like, the grumpy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. And she just like learns, and I love it. She's so great at that.
She is very good at
that
it.
That movie made me love the color lavender. that first dress she comes out in with her like dark hair. I was just like, holy moly, that color is everything for her. And I was like, that color works for me too.
And she was Miss New Jersey, and I was like, I am from New Jersey. Represent. All right, where are we? Natasha, give us another one.
Okay, so I was trying to think back to like the 1980s romances, and someone has Romancing the Stone on their list. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to put that on my list. My mom showed me Working Girl, and I actually just...
Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't mention that one.
Yeah, you do love that one.
I just rewatched it last night, and I showed like my best friend the movie. She a little bit ruined it for me because it is a very misogynistic movie, and we're pitting women together.
Does it 100%? Okay,
it doesn't hold up very well. But
their romance,
their chemistry is so unbelievable. Okay, so it's Melanie Griffith. If people who don't know who Melanie Griffith is, she's Tippi Hedren's daughter, who was in Psycho.
Who's that?
And the actress who dies in the first like scene in Psycho. Okay. And then she's Dakota Johnson's mom with Don Johnson, and they're so similar. Christina, did you know this? You look very astounded.
No, I did know this. I was just trying to think. Yeah.
And then we have Harrison Ford and Sigourney Weaver in this film. And
God, Sigourney Weaver is so awful. I love her so much.
And so what this movie did for me was, one, I never had really seen a movie where we're seeing someone in the workforce. And my mom was like, oh, yeah, this was me like in the 80s. And, you know, I was more like Sigourney Weaver style, not so much Melanie Griffith. And the whole premise of the movie is that she's trying to work her way up the ladder. She's gone to college. She's trying to get out of like Long Island type of situation, and
she's
wants
in this,
to be
like,
taken
totally
seriously.
Toxic relationship with Alec Baldwin.
Yes. Yeah, it's
Alec
terrible.
Alec Baldwin was in that?
Yes. I'm not steak. You can't just order me.
No memory of that.
And the whole fantasy is, so her boss is Sigourney Weaver, and she breaks her leg in a skiing accident. She just like goes off the side of the mountain. It's hilarious. And she kind of has to take over her life, and she finds out that Sigourney was kind of taking her idea and making it her own. So she's like, no way, I'm going to make this. This is happening for me. And so she gives a whole makeover, but she does it herself, and she gains this confidence. And then she kind of starts this like romance with Harrison Ford, but she doesn't know who he is at first. And that whole thing is just great. And then they meet in the office, and they're like, oh, kind of like a Grey's Anatomy situation, except they don't sleep together. The whole just fantasy of her making her life the way she wants it, and then having all of these things fall into place at the way that she had wanted, even though she has to experience some embarrassment and low points. I just loved this film, and it really just inspired me to want that type of like go-getter life.
I love that. It's such a good movie. I could see that it wouldn't hold up in some ways. Like, I don't love in hindsight that they pitted Sigourney Weaver and Melanie Johnson against each other. It could have been like, you know, done, that could have been done really differently. But, and Melanie Griffith in that is such a sex pot. It's almost over the top, but like, that's sort of who she was. That's who she played. So she was really playing to type, but their chemistry is so good. And the way that they like fall for each other is so convincing and just like awesome. I really, really, oh, good call. I'm so glad that you remembered that one.
And one of my favorite like little tidbits about this is that in the second 50 Shades, I think it's 50 Shades Darker, the last little lines that Melanie says in Working Girl is like, I don't want you to get me coffee. Like, if you're going to get your if you're going to get coffee, like, that's fine. You can get it for me, blah, blah, blah. And we can work everything out together. Talking to like her assistant, and Dakota Johnson says the same lines in 50 Shades Darker. And it, I was like, oh my gosh, my heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that whole 80s genre of like, rom-coms that like happened in New York. Do you know what I mean? Because there's like that one, like Romancing the Stone. Has anybody seen Tootsie?
Yes, I love Tootsie.
My mom always tells me to watch Tootsie.
I don't know how well it would like. I've never looked at it through the lens of like, could this be redone or anything? But I freaking love that movie. I could have put that one down.
I have yet to watch it. Yeah. So what else is on your list, Christina?
So my next one would be Romancing the Stone. That I probably watched like 7 million times because we had the VHS tape when I was little. And I used to think like I wanted to be Joan Wilder, but I didn't like actually know what that meant. And then there was a moment where like I was watching it years and years and years and years later with my husband. And it's the point where she's like, I think it's in the second one where she's like standing on like this balcony or a boat or something in the south of France. And my husband looked at me and he was like, oh my God, you guys are Joan Wilder. Like, you are Joan Wilder now. You guys are Joan. And so it was really funny. But I just like, I love those movies that like have like this adventure and, you know, all of these things. So when we wrote Something Wilder, that was sort of our like love letter to Romancing the Stone.
I love Wait, did you name it Something Wilder because her name is Joan
yes. Wilder?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Lily
I
Wilder.
Was just thinking that as you said it. I was like, her last name was Wilder?
Yeah. It was an homage.
And there's a moment Wilder, where Lily he Wilder. Says like the Lily Wilder.
Oh my gosh. Never read a rom-com that had such high stakes, and I was having so much fun with those, like, when they were, like, lost in the canyon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like,
oh, that's exactly what we wanted. We just wanted it to be fun. I mean, it was, like, a pandemic book that we wrote. We did not want to write a book that took place in, like, an office or a house or whatever. We were like, we just want to be outside. So it was so fun.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I think interesting because now we have this like revisited genre, because I feel like there wasn't a lot of Romancing the Stone. Like, there was like that one that one in like the romance adventure genre that both like men and women you know, if they were heterosexual, could enjoy it together. And now you guys wrote Something Wilder, and then now we have two movies out in like 1 year that are in the romance adventure genre. What are they
called? Miss Congeniality is also romance
adventure.
yeah
but like foresty, outdoors.
It's having another renaissance with like the J-Lo movie that just came out
in the Lost City.
Yes, definitely. So
funny. Yeah, they announced the Lost City when we had like just started writing, or so I can't even remember. We were just like, oh, what, like, this is either gonna be really good for us or really bad.
Ticket to Paradise. That also came out this year too.
Yeah.
It wasn't super adventure
really
though.
Adventure-y?
Is that the Winona? Is that the one with Winona in it and Keanu?
No.
No. What one was
no,
that?
No, it's the one with oh my gosh,
Julia Roberts.
Clooney.
Oh, okay.
Julia Roberts,
okay.
And George Clooney, right?
George Clooney.
I haven't seen that
I thought
one.
It was going to be much more rom-com-y than it
Me
was.
Too.
So here's my thing that I have a little bone to pick with Hollywood, which is that like, they're creating rom-coms as vehicles for big stars instead of pulling in stars that have chemistry to make the rom-com concept sell.
Yeah, they are doing that. Yes.
Time and again, we're seeing these rom-coms where there's zero chemistry with the leads. And then it's like, oh, well, rom-coms don't work. And it's like, no, you just aren't understanding the genre at all. Yeah. Like, you forgot that they have to have chemistry. Like, look at Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Look at Harrison Ford and Melanie Griffith. Like, look at Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles. Like, you have to have this chemistry between these leads.
Yeah, that's the problem with Marry Me. It was so cute, but they had no chemistry.
Oh, my God. That concept was adorable.
Yes.
And we watched it, and I was like,
Owen Wilson? Why?
Mm-hmm. Hey, but the same with The Lost City. I loved that movie so much. I loved it. Yeah. And they could pull it off. But there is more chemistry between her and Brad Pitt than there is between her and Charlie. Like, I was not begging for them to tear each other's clothes off.
Did you guys see the press photos for the Ashton Kutcher, Reese Witherspoon?
Oh, gosh. That one was a mess.
They barely stand in the same room together. And I was just like, you guys are not selling this movie to anybody. Like,
I couldn't finish that movie.
It translates into the movie. It's not good.
Like, why did we all fall in love with Twilight? We saw those press photos or like the MTV behind the scenes, whatever, of like Rob and Kristen. And we were like, what's going on there? Like, you know.
Yes. Yep. All right. I'm going to move to Legally Blonde.
Yes. I love that one.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love like a self-confidence journey and Legally Blonde being a blonde girl in like the 2000s. Everyone would typecast me as a person as stupid because that was the thing in the early 2000s. Blonde people are dumb. And they took that and turned it on its head. And I finally felt like, vindicated. I don't know, some sort of vindication. Yes. but it still holds up. I feel like it's so fun and it's so empowering. That montage, when she's like on the treadmill reading. Oh my God, it gets me every time. I'm like, yeah, bitch.
Also, like Jennifer Coolidge is so great in that.
Oh
like,
my God, the bend and snap. Yes.
Oh my God, I totally forgot she was even in that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She's good. She's a manicurist lady. Oh my gosh. It's just, it's great. I don't know about the chemistry between her and
Luke Wilson.
Luke Wilson. I mean,
the Wilson brothers.
Fair enough.
It's not just like, no.
But that one has such a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be a lawyer after that for a bit, and then I decided, no, I don't. All right, who's up here? Natasha, are you back around?
Yes, so my last one would be Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. Have you guys seen this movie?
Yeah.
I've seen it. Don't remember it much.
This was like, I was a little bit older and I was like more about like, oh, that boy's cute. This is with Kate Bosworth, Josh Duhamel.
Oh, right.
Jennifer Goodwin is in it as a best friend. And then what is his name? I always forget his name.
Todd Hamilton?
No.
Oh, you're talking about that 70s show?
Yeah, from him. Yeah, that guy.
Eric Foreman.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What is his name?
That's not him.
Oh, no, but that's his name in the show. Crap on a cracker. I know his name.
Oh, it's a weird name. It's like Topher Grace.
Topher Grace. Yes. Yes.
Well done, Lyle.
And I like that name. Why do I need that in here?
I love this because I have always been obsessed with celebrities and the whole fantasy that she wins a sweepstakes to go on a date with Tad Hamilton. She's from like a small little town. That fueled me because I have just like an ever burning heart for Adam Driver, Henry Cavill. And I'm like, oh, if this would happen to me.
What? Did you dream about it happening with Robert Pattinson?
Because I
do all the time.
Yes. This is what I wanted to happen with Rob.
We're gonna date.
Yes. Yes, Abby. Kellen Letts as well. and also this movie is absolutely hysterical. Topher Grace is so, so funny. And I'm at the end of the movie. Should I spoil it? I don't know.
It's been out for like 20 years.
She gets on a plane to like go off and have this adventure with the actor. And I'm like, yes, go. And then she decides that she's in love with Topher Grace and then goes back and
oh my gosh, she does?
Yeah. And I'm like, come on. You're going to have this small life for such a long time. Just go live the big life for a bit and then come back.
Yeah. He'd still take you back. He understands.
He's a nice guy. It's happening, Topher Grace.
That's a good one.
That's cute. The wish fulfillment is fun. Okay, my last one. I was really trying to choose between Clueless and 10 Things I Hate About You, because for both of them, for me, is like, I love a good retelling. I love a retelling that like brings, you know, the story into, and you don't always realize that it's a retelling, right? So Clueless would be a retelling of Emma, and 10 Things I Hate About You is a retelling of Taming of the Shrew. Mm-hmm. But I just love it so much because she really is a dick, and like he is so, but like in a great like way, but she is, even to like a feminist, like a self-proclaimed feminist myself, I'd be like, calm down. You know what I mean?
It's going to be like, okay. All right.
Yeah. Like you're good. But you know, and he is just so, I mean, it was like peak Heath Ledger adorableness. And, I don't know. I really love that one. It's one of those that I can put on and have in the background while I'm working. And it just like, honestly, it feels like a comfort movie. So
I just watched this last week.
And I don't, I remember thinking Clueless, like she was so mean. I have to rewatch it.
Oh my God. It's so good. Paul Rudd is just like, yeah. Oh, and Alicia Silverstone.
I was a wee baby, I feel like.
So yeah, so there was Legally Blonde and Clueless for me. And I much preferred Clueless. I just loved her fashion way more. And it was, it was set in also California. So.
Oh, okay.
Like my area.
Yeah. Christina, what was your last one?
Tangled. Which Lo and I will say is a rom-com and adventure romance. We will fight anybody on it. It's the best Disney romance. And like Flynn Rider is such a great romance hero. So much so that when we started to write Beautiful Player, we were basically like, let's write like Flynn Rider. And now people who have read Beautiful Player go, oh my God.
I see it. Yeah.
It's so good. And it's just like, you see her grow so much, and it is a romance. And that scene with the lanterns is one of the most romantic scenes I think of any movie. Yeah. And it's so beautiful. Stunning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I gotta rewatch that. It's been a while. It's been too long.
I mean, it's romancing the stone. You know what I mean? So.
Would you say that Flynn Rider's a grumpy guy? Because Nicole says classic sunshine grumpy
guy. He's like charismatic flirt.
Yeah. He's the charmer that like gets what he wants. But
I would say it's like playboy kind. Naive girl. If you're gonna look for a trope in there, sort of like the Lothario meets the innocence, but jaded. Yeah.
So watching him crumble and like then show his softness is. Everything I love in romance. Yes.
Yes. My last one on here is 17 again. And I am obsessed with 17 again.
Obviously, is that Zac Efron?
Yes. Yep.
Zac Efron.
So this is in my adult black hole, but he is adorable.
Yes, it's Chandler Bing. It's who plays his wife? I can't remember.
One on the Jergens commercials. That's all I know.
She's great, and so obviously, like my first book is very like it's very 17 again magic, and I just wanted love when people say they don't like rom-coms and they like 17 again. I'm like, no, 17 again is a rom-com.
Yes, it is.
It is. And it's sort of a retelling. I mean, it's basically like It's a Wonderful Life.
But not as sad, right?
Not as sad one. Yes.
I've never watched watched It's a Wonderful Life, even though everyone has told me that my book is It's a Wonderful Life.
I just watched it this year.
And yeah, and all I know is that on Friends, Phoebe wouldn't watch it because it's too sad. So I was like, it must be very sad. I don't think I want to watch it. I have to watch it.
I don't remember the end because when I think of it, I don't think of it as a romance, but it is. It's like... He ends up with his ex-wife at the end, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm going to have to rewatch that.
And it's so funny. I laugh out loud so much watching that movie. And Zac Efron is just so good in it. And he does all of Matthew Perry's mannerisms. Yeah. And
you can see him. Zac Efron adorableness in that movie.
He is. And he does all of, because we know Matthew Perry's mannerisms so well from Friends. And he's doing them all. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, he's playing Matthew Perry and he's killing it.
That's awesome.
It's really funny. Like his daughter tries to hit on him.
Oh God. So funny.
And he's trying to like flirt with his wife, but his wife's like, you're 17. it's so fun. I love that. So, but I think we've gone through all of our faves.
Yay!
Yes.
Yay!
I don't know if we like real quick just want to like name out a romance book recommendation because I had us all write one down that we've read lately.
My recommendation is Georgie All Along by Kate Claiborne. And, you know, she's not a rom-com writer usually. She's much more of like literary romance, and her books are very lyrical and beautiful and like heart-clenchy. This one is, for me, it has the comedic aspects because of the characters' voices and like how they see the world and kind of the foibles that they have to like get through. And I just, if you know Kate Claiborne's books, you know that each one of them feels sort of like that feeling of being in like a cozy cabin inside when it's cold outside and you're like cozy inside and you're just like curled up under a blanket and it feels that way to read one. You feel just like cozy. But this one is about Georgie, who is, she was a Hollywood assistant. Her boss has decided to leave the industry and Georgie is sort of like left without a job. And her boss is like, go figure out what you want to do. And Georgie's like, I don't know what that is. So she goes back to her hometown ostensibly to help her best friend as she prepares to birth twins. And, you know, Georgie in her hometown was kind of like seen as this local flaky kid. She's the daughter of the town weirdos. Like she has all of this baggage that gets dragged along with her that she doesn't necessarily relate to anymore. And so it's really the story of like how Georgie figures out how to connect with her past self in ways that she really wants to still, and how to kind of be an adult in this space where she was never really allowed to be anything but Georgie. And it's just this like really sweet, super romantic, very sexy book. The hero's voice is one of my absolute favorite heroes and the way he's written in years. So I cannot recommend this book enough. I love it.
Aww. That kind of reminds me of somebody that I used to know, that movie that just came out, except that one is not as funny, so I'm sure this book is super fun. All right, Christina, what about you?
Last year I read Sally Thorne's book, Angelica Frankenstein Makes Her Match, and I just love it because I just like want people to do like big kind of different scary things. And
yes,
so this is essentially Dr. Frankenstein's sister, Angelica, is sort of like this spinster and she wants to make a husband. So she goes into the lab with her brother and is basically picking parts out to build herself a husband. And it's just like, if you read The Hating Game and love The Hating Game, it would be like if Tim Burton wrote The Hating Game. And it's just kind of like darkly funny and atmospheric and written in this voice that only Sally has. And I just really love it.
I loved Natasha, it so, so, so much. Yeah. I read it on our trip to London.
Yeah, she was talking about it the whole time. I was like, I clearly have to get this book.
It's just fun, you know? So sometimes I'm just in the mood for romance that's like makes me feel all the swoons and is sexy, but is also fun. And that book just like hit all of those boxes.
I think I'm gonna move us on to quickly talk about y'all's books because we can do our recommendations anytime. The True Love Experiment is coming out in May. I'm very excited. I started reading it this week. it is kind of like a companion to the soulmate equation, right? Would you call it a companion?
It definitely stands alone. The soulmate equation was our 2021 rom-com. And this one is, you know, it has a side character and it's her romance arc. But yeah, you don't have to have read The Soulmate, but if you have, you'll be happy.
She's the best friend of the lead in The Soulmate Equation, Fizzy. And I got so excited because I didn't know that it was connected. And I started reading and I was like, oh, River Penna. Oh my gosh. And so I don't read synopsis because I don't like to know anything. Obviously, that's why I didn't know.
We just need to know, like, it's by you guys and like, okay, I'm reading it. That's all we need to know.
I mean, if you all wrote it, I'm like, okay, I'm reading it. But yeah, so it looks like she might be going on a reality show that the producer is going to be her love interest. I'm so excited.
Yeah. I say I don't know the synopsis either, so I'm just like,
well, so I will tell the listeners and the viewers here, it is about Fizzy Chen, who's a romance author, and she has basically lost her inspiration, and Connor Prince the third is the producer. He usually does like marine mammal documentaries, and his boss is like, you're gonna do a reality show, and he's like, what? So he doesn't want to lose his job, doesn't want to have to leave the area, and so he like decides to do this. He sees a bunch of Fizzy's books on his ex-wife's bookshelf, and he's like, wouldn't it be cool to do a dating show where a romance author falls in love? And so Fizzy is still searching for her joy. She's lost her inspiration. She says, why not? And there's a bunch of like fun little nods to romance that we put in there. Like all of the heroes in the show are different romance archetypes, like the cinnamon roll and the vampire, the prince and stuff like that. But you know, it's been really fun to kind of just like dive really deep into our romance roots. And like, you know, Something Wilder was such a fun departure in terms of writing a romance that took place in an adventure setting. And I think we just wanted to like kind of come back to our touchstone, which is just like pure romance bliss. Mm-hmm. And so Fizzy is just, she's such a joy for us. Like it's probably our favorite book. We love her so much.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so exciting. Oh my gosh.
It just has like all our favorite things. It's about just like proudly embracing and protecting the things that bring you joy.
Oh, yes. I love that.
Me too.
So we're linking to The True Love Experiment in the show notes if you haven't pre-ordered it yet. It comes out May 16th. Do y'all want to talk about what you're currently working on, or is it under wraps?
It's under wraps, but I will say there was a very big hint somewhere in this podcast. So once we announce it, you guys will be like, ah.
You'll be like, oh my God. Oh, snap.
Oh, shoot.
Dropping Easter eggs. Well, we're so excited, and I'm so excited to finish the book now. It's your favorite.
I think my favorite grand gesture that we've ever written. Like the ending, like the last half of this book, I just feel like, I mean, the first half is, of course, I'm very proud, but the last half of this book, I feel like, is just like romance, just like
it's our best ending ever.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. Wait, real quick, before this book, what was your favorite of your books?
I mean, it's hard to say. I would probably say Love in Other Words or Autobiography, which are still like, aww, I mean, of course we love them all, but. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like one pulls your heart.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for coming and chatting with us today. We appreciate you giving us your time so much. I'm sorry we ran a little over.
This is so fun. It was so good to see your guys' faces, and we just love you so much. So.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you so much. We love you. Thank you. Well, I guess like I don't. How do we want to sign off, Natasha? Never like send off with a guest here, but we appreciate y'all so much, and we're so excited about everything that you do. So thank you so much.
We love your podcast. We're so excited for you guys. It was good to see you.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Okay. Well, bye.
Bye.
To snap, crackle, pop culture news. Natasha, what have you got for us today? This is your news.
Both of these are mine. Last week, they dropped the news that a new Lord of the Rings movie is potentially happening at New Line Cinema. So this is going to be outside of the Rings of Power show. It's the original studio that did the first, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. We don't have any word on if Peter Jackson's involved, but I am excited. People are like, I'm scared. I'm like, I just, whatever type of Lord of the Rings that I get, I'm always excited. And if it's not good, then it's not good, but it's just an epic story. And I don't know, because there wouldn't be really anything after Lord of the Rings. It would be something set before, because the elves leave after the third one. So it would probably be, yeah, Amy, it would be probably something in the Silmarillion, like within that time. Rings of Power starts at the beginning of Sauron, so we could even go before that when Morgoth is like the big bad. So we'll see. Christine, do you know anything that I'm talking about?
No, I'm like glazing over. So I'm happy for y'all. I'm kind of excited about this Steve Rogers play.
Okay.
Because I thought it was so entertaining in Hawkeye.
Rogers the Musical is coming to Disneyland.
This is a Broadway play in Hawkeye in the background that's happening.
Yes.
It sounds so funny.
So they actually, like at D23, they actually had a live performance of that song that they play at the very end. And
it's the story of the Avengers, the first movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, it follows Steve. So like how Steve. He, yeah. So it follows him, I think. And then we bring in all the Avengers, but it's going to be a one act play at the Hyperion Theater. So the Hyperion Theater housed the Aladdin musical and then the Frozen musical. And I don't remember Aladdin. I think it was too young, but Frozen was exceptional. It was so good. Did you ever see it, or did we?
I saw it with you on your birthday. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Memory. It's a one act play, and I don't know how much we're gonna get of the whole Rogers play, but I think
it'll
probably
fun though, because we have no Rogers play before this.
I know. I'm very excited. And there's been nothing at the Hyperion Theater since. And that's one of my favorite things to do, especially being like an annual pass holder, is just to go sit and watch the show. And then they change the cast all the time, so you never know what you're going to get.
Let's move right on into what right now, though. All right. What are you reading this week?
I finished Lady Midnight, which was so good. And I have a lot of feelings. And then
there are so many.
Started Lord of Shadows.
I have not been reading that much this week because I've been trying to write. But when I have been reading, it's been The True Love Experiment by Christina Lauren. Oh. Natasha, you didn't watch any TV this week?
No, it's been a busy week.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch any movies. So,
yeah. So what TV show did you watch, Christine?
All right. So this is why Perfect Match is on my brain. I'm watching this, you know, really bottom tier, I feel like, reality show. Okay, it's not bottom tier, or else I wouldn't be watching it. I wouldn't be interested in it. Perfect Match on Netflix. It's taking like all these people from all the Netflix reality shows, like Love is Blind, The Circle, The Mole, what is that one? The Hot One, Too Hot to Handle. Mm. And they have them in this house, and every night they have to match with someone in order to, and they go up to, they have to sleep in a room together. And if you don't match with anyone, you're out. And then the next day there's a compatibility challenge. And if they win the challenge, then they get to pick two new singles to bring in and match up with one of the other singles. So they kind of can fuck with their matches, or they can try to make someone who doesn't have a good match a new match. And people are coming in left and right that I know from different stuff. And there's this girl, Francesca, from Too Hot to Handle. And she is so evil. And she's like, everyone thinks I'm evil. And it's like, because you are. Like, whenever anyone talks to her match, she's like, this fucking bitch, this fucking slut. And then when she doesn't want like her match anymore, she just leaves them high and dry after lying to them and making them think that they had this really great relationship. And she's done it over and over. I can't stand it. She's such a liar. She reminds me of, like, the worst traits of some people I know. But anyway, like, there's moments where you think that she's actually nice, and then she goes around and does something so heartless, and I'm like, you're so mean to him. I'm just completely sucked in, if you can't tell. There's a lot of fun characters. Bartice is back. Shane is back from Love is Blind.
Shane?
Yes, Nick from The Circle. So many people you'd recognize if you've watched any of these shows. Anyway, I have officially gone sucked into, like, all of the Netflix shows. But, okay, so there's this show on Peacock called The Traitors. And it's made by the same people who make The Circle. That's why I've heard of it. And Suri from Survivor. If you've watched Survivor at all, you know Suri. I mean, maybe you don't if you've only watched one season. But Suri has done 5 different seasons. She's a legend in Survivor, okay? She's so good at the game, and she hasn't won. My favorite Suri season, if you haven't watched, I think it's season 15. It's the first fans versus favorites. It's where they have the amazing all-female alliance that, like, just rules the game. I highly recommend it if you haven't watched it yet. But she is just so good. Like, she can make anyone believe anything. And she was perfect for the show The Traitors. So it's the first season is on Peacock. And she is so fucking good at The Traitors. I blew through this show. So the cast of The Traitors is half, like, reality show celebrities, half regular people. So, like, Ari from The Bachelor is on it. There's a bunch of people from Big Brother on it. Ari, I keep calling him Ari because it looks like that. I see his name pop up. Ari from The Bachelor. There's a bunch of people from Big Brother on it. There's a bunch of people from, like, Bravo shows on it. It's a really good cast. Like, I was very entertained by them. And it's basically, the game is kind of like Clue. 3 people are chosen to be traitors out of this group of people. And every night they, quote, murder someone, and that person has to leave the house. It starts with 20 people. And the next day, everyone in the house tries to figure out who the traitor was, and at the end of the night they banish someone that they think is the traitor, and that person will tell them after they're banished whether they were a traitor or not. And at the end of the game, if there's no traitors left, the faithfuls, who are all the other people, get the money. If there's any traitors in their midst that they haven't caught, the traitors get the money. And oh my god, if you like Survivor, I think you're gonna enjoy this show. I had so much fun, and Suri fucking kicks ass. So if you like Suri, you want to watch the show. And Stephanie from Survivor's on it too. All right, movies. What did you watch, Natasha?
Okay, so I I took a day off, and I was trying to figure out, like, what I wanted to watch, and, like, if there was, like, a TV show I wanted to binge, and I asked people for suggestions. Literally everything I've seen. Okay, I was very specifically wanting to watch, like, a romantic type of movie, so I put on this Netflix movie called Purple Hearts, and it's with Sophia Carson, and it's set in San Diego, and it's about, like, the issue with this movie is that it is. When I was watching it, I was like, wait, what is this? Because it's like a romance movie, because this girl needs health insurance. She has diabetes and she needs insulin and she can't afford it. And so she marries, once she comes up with this idea that she's going to marry someone from the military, because she lives near Camp Pendleton, which is a base here in California. And
Abby says she hated this movie.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I really liked the romance. The issue with this film is that you're bringing, like, different sides of the of, like, conservative versus liberal. Okay, so she's, like, the liberal side, and he's, like, the conservative side. But it's like, just it feels a little bit like it's like kind of adding to, like,
controversial Netflix movie.
Yes, I didn't know this, and then I watched it. I was like, "What the fuck?" It's like adding to, like, it feels like it's a movie supporting the MAGA agenda, and ooh. I was like, "Whoa, okay." Because what you want to see is like, you wanted to see these people come together, and then that never is even the, like, that doesn't even come up. It's just like, oh, they fall in love and now they're in love. And, it just shows how fucked up, like, our health, like, it's like the, our health insurances and how, like, oh, he's just fighting for our country. Anyways. So I like the romance, but everything else was just like so against my beliefs.
Oh man.
It felt like a Nicholas Sparks movie.
Thank you so much for being here and supporting the show. If you haven't yet, please follow us for free on your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/@thoseworkingfangirls. If you're watching the visual version, leave us a comment, hit the like button, tell a friend you think would like the show, that you enjoy the show, because spreading by word of mouth is such a great way to grow the pod and help support us. If you want to leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, we would really appreciate that too. That really, really helps the show, if you like the show, of course. And if you want to support the show in an even bigger way, we have a Patreon. We have 3 different tiers. On the $5 tier, Team Jacob is our extra half an hour more personal show, Fangirl Tea Time, that we love doing every week. And there are tons of other perks in Team Edward, our $10 tier, our Team Polis Bananas is where you have the perk of
being on the show, and you can fill out a form to like be on the show.
If you want to be on the show, we also do fangirl bonding sessions every month with our Team Polis Bananas tier. With our Team Edward tier, we have movie commentaries. We have an extra show every month. Lots of fun perks. You can check them out in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for any and all support. We are so appreciative. It's why we can do the show.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. We are going to move on to our Fuck, Marry, Kill of the Week.
Okay, I picked it this week, and theming to our rom-com situation, I picked some of our top actresses in the rom-com category. So we have Julia Roberts, Sandra Bullock, and Reese Witherspoon.
I know exactly what I'm going to do here. I am going to marry Sandra Bullock, my fave. I am going to kiss Reese Witherspoon, and I am going to cliff Julia Roberts. I am sorry, but I vibe better with the other two.
Oof. What about you?
I think I am going to marry Sandra Bullock. I'm going to kiss Julia Roberts. And I'm going to cliff Reese Witherspoon.
Oh my God, Reese Witherspoon hater.
I love Julia Roberts. Like, she was my like number one girl. Like, I loved all of her movies. I would always want to watch a Julia Roberts movie.
I mean, I love them all too. Runaway Bride was like a staple for me as a child.
I would rent it at the store every time we went and I didn't find something. I was like, let's get Runaway Bride again.
It's so good.
It is so good. Honestly, maybe I should have put that in one of my favorites, because that's an older one that I
I was going to put My Best Friend's Wedding in my favorite, but I forgot about Bridget Jones, because I was trying to figure out what my gateway to the Jane Austen was, and that definitely was.
I love the Runaway Bride, like the venturing back into her history aspect of it, and like her figuring out who she is through people that she dated. I love it so much.
It's time for chapter chat now, y'all. We're doing chapters 24 and 25 today. Been reading
reading ACOTAR very slowly if you are just joining us for our Christina Lauren episode today. ACOTAR stands for A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. Mm-hmm. And today we are diving into chapters 24 and 25. So chapter 24, do you want me to take chapter 25 and you can walk us through chapter 24, Natasha?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Bring us on through.
Unless So Feyre wakes up the next day after she falls asleep with in the meadow, in the field, with Tamlin, and we don't really understand why she fell asleep. And all of a sudden, the glamours are down. And she doesn't recognize anyone. There's so many more fairies around. She doesn't even recognize Alice, who is, like, probably her only friend there.
She's not even a friend. Alice is her maid.
Yeah, that's true.
And I remembered Alice looking like this with, like, the bark type skin. So when we first met her and she looked different, I was so confused.
I don't remember any of it.
I don't remember this at all with the glamour. Did you?
No, not at all.
I know. There was like tons of Fae there that she just didn't even see. This is so embarrassing. I wish they had told her.
Yes, because now like you're thinking of, which made me think, the little fairies that we heard talking to her while she was hiding, like that was just, they were just probably walking around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so awkward to realize there's been tons of people around you this whole time. You thought you were by yourself, too, because she could have been doing things that she thought she was doing in private.
Yes.
And people could have just been there. I mean, I was so mad when they revealed this. Tamlin was just laughing at her, like, well, they've been here the whole time. We only showed you who was absolutely necessary. I was like, excuse me? Mm. What if you were in her room? What if they were cleaning and she was, like, getting undressed?
Yeah. Ugh. Or, like,
gross.
I don't know. Just, yeah.
And, like, what if she was walking through the halls just, like, dancing and, like, she hit people? Like, like, so uncomfortable.
Yeah, Amy says so awkward and disorienting. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because Lucien didn't change for her. Like, his glamour, I don't know if he even put one up or... But then later we find out that, like, the glamour does fall. I don't know.
Yeah, his eyes burn harder and his hair is more auburn. It feels like, and also I was wondering if the glamours are actually down or if she could just see through them, if the magic just is on her now, you know?
Yeah, because he allowed that, I don't know, when he like kissed her in the meadow, like kissed her eyes.
When he gave her the magic. I think that's why she fell asleep, because the magic was a lot for her body to process.
Probably. So she comes down for another meal. Anyways, they're laughing at her, and then we see her. She goes out to the garden because she wants to paint. There's like a, she's referencing Alice's skin she wants to paint, and there's this head impaled. What was it impaled on?
On a stake.
Stake, and it didn't have a mask on, so obviously it wasn't from the spring court.
Bleeding.
Yeah, with his mouth like wide open and eyes wide open. Of course, Tamlin and Lucien are like right behind her as she sees it. And it has the Night Court sigil on it.
Yeah, well, burned into it.
Burned into it.
It's a brand. Yeah, it's a brand with the Night Court sigil. But don't we learn that the Night Court has actually two courts and one is the mountain and it has three mountains?
Yeah, that's true.
Into it. Yeah. So the Night Court, quote, delights in torture of every kind. And this is their idea of a prank, is what Tamlin says. Gag.
Court of Nightmares. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Tamlin's like, don't worry, I'll keep you safe. And Feyre remembers what the cereal says and says, stay close to the High Lord. And I'm like, which one?
She always remembers that over and over. I know. I was thinking that too. I was like, did we mean a different High Lord? And that's chapter 24, right?
Yeah, they talked a little bit about like how Tamlin was glad that he wasn't around when the humans were sent over the wall, because they had never known seasons. Yeah. And I'm like, you literally just like sent the pigs to slaughter because they had absolutely no idea how to live in these certain conditions. And Feyre was like, oh, well, maybe that's why he's so awkward, because he's never been around humans before, and it gives him like this excuse.
Yeah, she's making excuses for him. Like, that's why he was so awkward and brutish. Like, he didn't have to be brutish just because you're a human. Like, you would think he'd be more sensitive because he thought you were breakable. But, you know, it is what it is now. All right.
So do you think it was interesting next chapter or?
Oh, I think it was interesting. What did you think?
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like a skip. Summer solstice was, I think it was interesting as well. It's on the border of interesting and good for me. What about you?
I 25. Mean, sure. Just like, I don't want to see this.
Yeah, it was. I feel like it was a well-written chapter, but it felt like the parts of the Mortal Instruments that freaked me out, all the Fae stuff that scares me. So in chapter 25, summer solstice is a holiday celebration for them. It's not like the spring ceremony. It's a fun day. And Feyre is like, I'm going to let loose. I'm going to drink some fairy wine. And Lucien goes, I wouldn't drink that if I was you. And she's like, I remember last month where you told me to eat these berries because they're harmless, and then I was having hallucinations for hours and he just laughed at me the whole time. I couldn't believe, I don't know why I ever liked Lucien, because that is not a funny joke. That is a dick move to drug her. Mm-hmm. But like, I why did we ever like him? He's such an asshole all the time. He only covers his own ass, and he's only telling her not to drink the Fey wine because he doesn't want to get in trouble with Tamlin. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, of course, Feyre chugs up. At least he's not hiding who he is, you know.
I just don't like him. It bothers me more because I thought Lucien was like my favorite character in this book, and I'm like, why? I thought he was her friend. I thought he was helping her. But really, he's just serving Tamlin's interests and his own interest. Anyway, so I was so mad at him when I found out he let her be drugged by berries for hours and hours on end. So Feyre drinks a ton of fairy wine, and there's all this music, and she wants to be a part of the music. And this is the part I thought, Sarah writes dancing so well, so beautifully. Like, you can tell she must love to dance. A lot of her characters are dancers, and whenever she's writing about it, I just get swept up in it, because obviously I like to dance too, and I'm like, oh, this just feels so visceral while I'm reading it. And she's just one with the music, and there's all these musicians playing, and then who's playing the fiddle but Tamlin? He's over there fiddling away, and she goes over to him, and she's just like doing her dance sequence in front of him, basically. And then he comes over on one knee and feels for her, like, I'm just picturing him like, fiddling away. And she's like, I was a snake dancing, and I'm picturing her like doing like a lap dance on this fiddler.
Yeah, Abby's like, that's actually so cringe. It is. I was listening to it. I was like, no. Why is he fiddling? This is weird.
Because it's his one other talent other than killing. Don't you remember? We talked about his mad fiddle skills in one of the chapters. The chapter where he talked about his mad limerick, dirty limerick skills.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm glad we are to actually see him fiddle. I had no memory of this again. And then he puts down the fiddle and they dance together. They're one with the music together. And then he's like, come with me. Let me show you something. And he shows her this valley full of will-o'-wisps, and there are these little fairies that are singing together, and he says they're spirits of air and light come to celebrate the solstice. And I can't help but see the alignment of the wording of spirits of air and light sounds a lot like everything in Sky, House of Sky and Breath. Like, they sound like they're from that world. So I definitely have to finish that book. And I feel like I know where we're going. I felt like it for a while. That's why I haven't finished it too, because I feel like everyone has been saying things that have led me to the right conclusion. But that's kind of the end of the chapter in terms of things that really caught my eye.
Well, they kiss.
They kiss. They kiss. Yeah, she's, oh, I forgot. Yeah, they kiss. I didn't even care. I was just like, they kiss. He's like, I would like to kiss you. And she was like, then do it. And then he does. And it's warm. And that's about how she describes it. It's soft.
Well, Feyre goes like, she goes, that's it.
Oh, yeah, because he's being gentle. And then he crushes himself to her.
I can't believe I thought this was like, not worth noting that they kissed.
I did not remember their first kiss. The only thing I remembered was the whole, like, him pushing her up against the wall thing after Caliban.
Oh, yeah, and she says after this kiss that this was the happiest moment of her life.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad.
I mean,
it's
she's sad. Had a rough life. Yeah. She's had a really rough time of it, so it makes sense. And of course, like, she's swept up in Tamlin's charming aspects right now. She's not, it hasn't hit her what her situation's like. It does creep up on her, obviously, but it's also new and fresh and free compared to what she was living in before. So yep. That's chapters 24 and 25. I can't wait till they go under the mountain. I'm like, is this the mountain? Is this the mountain chapter? Is this the mountain? I guess the mountain's not till the third act. I don't know, but it felt like we were there for a long time when I read this the first time. I guess we'll see. Well, y'all, that was our show today. We would love to hear any of your feedback, whether it's in the comments, if it's in the comments on Instagram, if it's via email. You could always send us feedback at thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com. If you want to share your favorite rom-coms of all time, I'd love to hear them, because I'm taking notes, because I always have moods where I want to watch a rom-com, and I feel like I've watched them all, but I haven't watched some that Christina and Lo mentioned today, so I'm excited to explore those. Yes. Yeah, I think I'm going to watch Long Shot.
it's a cute movie.
Yeah, I always see it and I'm like, this is a weird pairing. But that's our show today. Our Those Forking Fangirls is edited by Jake Needham and Alex Polis, with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Heather Traska. We are going to go record Fangirl Tea Time for this week. We're going to figure out what we're chatting about today. My name's Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And we will see you next Friday. Bye.
Bye, guys.